It's Stompface, the Violence King, and you're listening to the Mep Report. Enjoy, or I punch you.
Left my home back in Omaha. See if I can make it out in the world. And I got as far as Wichita. Suddenly I wasn't sure anymore. Lost all my friends in Los Angeles. And I'm not welcome in New York. But I must stop back in Omaha, where the fans, they always crying out for more.
Welcome to Memreport number 120, April 19th, 2010.
Wanted to prove it to my family,
What's going on, everyone out there? We have a full compliment tonight. We'd like to welcome back to the fold Story, just back from a triumphant debate experience.
Some things are best when they end. War, the national debate tournament just ended.
Lives.
Plague.
Things. That long, uncomfortable pause.
Exactly.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I find that there's a Geico commercial right now where the Geico lizard thing, Gecko, says something about he's going through this commercial, and then he says something about how he often finds that he can use uncomfortable pauses to, you know, whatever, provide some, like, to make a sale or something. And then he does the so-called uncomfortable pause at the end of the commercial, but it just doesn't work. Like, it's very obvious that, okay, see, here's an uncomfortable pause, but it's not very long, and it's not really uncomfortable because no one's on the other end except you. So it's like you'd just be like, I think I'll just shut this off. Like, there's no like interactivity between you and the Gecko, you know? So, not so much.
I interact with him all the time when he's on my TV. I don't know about you.
Oh, well, I don't know what to say about that. That's really troubling in a lot of ways. Speaking of a couple of pauses, Story and Russ are like, all right, that's enough from us. We're
all
not
going
to say anything about that.
Good show.
120. How about that? That seems
They should have just bought like 60 seconds of airtime and made it really uncomfortable. That would be awesome. They just did that, and the Gecko would occasionally blink at you and tilt his head.
That's the type of commercial I would make if I had the money to do such things.
I think it would be really – it would move the discourse in our country. It would really make a difference. Like, people would not know what to do.
I think a commercial that I would make would just be some very generic-looking, disheveled guy staring wildly into the camera and looking around the screen as if he were peering into your living room, and then just sort of like – with his hands in his pockets, just sort of being uncomfortable and say, hey, what is that, orange soda?
And then it's like a Sunkist
commercial.
Someone
in the country would freak out and jump out the window in fear of their TV.
I love it. Wow. That's how you would market it, too. You'd be like, and the great thing is someone will freak out and jump out the window. They're like, but how is this going to help us sell soda? You're like, I don't know, you fool. My job is simply to cause uncomfortable pauses. I don't
it sounds
think
a lot like that one video you made, Russ.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Which one?
Do you jump in front of a refrigerator, Russ? And then, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That whole avant-garde online video experiment of uncomfortableness.
Exactly.
I really should pick that up again. That was really fun.
Yeah, I wanted to make one with the Centivine, but Greg won't like our own response.
That would be awesome.
Yes. There will be no shiitake bukkake version
and
with
Clea
and Centivine. That
I wasn't
sure.
First of all, I'm not
even sure that we've ever like publicly announced that I'm responsible for
shiitake. No, we haven't. It's a trade secret.
So this is all being edited out. Or maybe not, I don't know. But Story also filmed a response video
I haven't put that up. I think it was what happened was that I had a particular like fake username picked out that I wanted, and then it was already taken on YouTube, and that was enough to demoralize my friends.
Never mind. Moment's gone.
I don't care. I didn't even like it anyway.
Exactly. That was enough. That was how much momentum I had behind the project. It's like that. to the momentum was like, oh, okay, now I don't care. So,
you know, actually,
do a whole thing of underground videos. That'd be fun. I really need a camera. That's the thing.
That's, you know, it's, I was thinking about this. I don't know if you guys saw this very controversial Tiger Woods commercial that came out shortly before the Masters when he was competing again. Did you guys see this commercial?
About it, I think. It was like commentary. Sort of taking a swipe at him, right?
Well, no, it's done. It's by Nike. And so it just shows a black and white picture of Tiger Woods. And okay. The camera's just, and it's sort of grainy black and white, like the camera's just, you know, focused on him. And then the voiceover is his father, Earl Woods, obviously recorded right. from before Earl Woods' death, which was like, I think he passed away like 2 years ago or something, saying things mm-hmm. like, you know, you have to learn lessons from what you go through and you have to, you know, move on and blah, 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 blah. So there was a massive, it was interesting because it was a very kind of dark commercial. And so there right. was a massive, like, complete split reaction. Like, half the people were like, this is brilliant. Nike really did a good job with this because they're not sugarcoating it. They're just, you know, they're doing something that's very powerful. And then the other half was like, how can this piece of crap use his father from beyond the grave to help sell shoes? And I can't believe he would do this.
He just cannot handle sex
and
in this country.
Blah, blah, blah. So it was like literally like, you know, complete split, like, hey, you know, pitchforks and torches, or this is brilliant, you know, let's give the people awards. So I don't know what I really thought about it. I really was kind of going back and forth in my own head about whether it wasn't. I think I might have thought that Nike did a good job with it, but that Tiger Woods shouldn't have done it. But maybe I don't know if I can really split the baby that way. But that was how it
that's
felt to me. It was, yeah.
Because I had heard about it, and I had heard about it from only one source, and it was sort of, I guess, a biased source. And they had presented it that they thought that they were actually, which I don't know, like, how they would have even gotten permission to use his father's stuff if this were the case, but that they were, like, basically making it like his father was, like, lecturing him and criticizing him from the grave, which sounded very, like, you know, taking quite a swipe or whatever else, that it's like, I think less of you now or something, and, you know, I'm looking down and shaming you, which sounded like that presentation sounds a little more even-handed or a little more Rorschach-y, like, you know, sort
yeah,
of
I mean,
make
it
of
was
it what you already feel.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of lecturing. I think he was sort of lecturing right. him a little bit, except that, you know, I mean, the truth is that Nike, of course, did this with full support from Tiger Woods, obviously. And
right.
Nike is well known for doing commercials that are edgy. I think that Nike has done some of the best, just in terms of like advertising skill. You know, the commercial with Lance Armstrong that has him, you know, on the bike, you know, raising his arms as he crosses the finish line. They're like, you know, according to medical doctors, Lance Armstrong is neither alive nor has he just won the Tour de France. And then they do the Just Do It thing. That was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like the fact that they've done gutsy stuff of that kind, and this was certainly gutsy, but the question then becomes, you know, were they just trying to sell product here? Were they trying to be like obvious, sort of like, you know, make a statement in society, and then while they're at it, sell product? I mean, obviously long term they want to sell product, but, you know, I don't know. I was really unsure what to make of it and what I thought of him doing it. I can't imagine sort of my estate giving permission for them to use my father's,
right.
you know, I don't think I would ever do that in my case, but I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like they tried to make a Rorschach test, right? Which is like sort of the ultimate advertising. It's like the Barack Obama presidential campaign, right? Like whatever you think they're trying to say, you will believe they're trying to say, and therefore yeah. you will like the commercial in some way. Like, obviously, it seems like they failed a little bit because some people are upset because it comes back to commercialism, which is good. It shows that people have, you know, a healthy disrespect for corporations. But,
yeah.
like, it sounds like, you know, if you see that commercial just sort of objectively, putting aside the commercialism aspect of it, you know, and you think that Tiger Woods is a disgrace to society, then you'll see it that the father is, like, lecturing from the grave and, like, trying to get him back on course and criticizing and still gives him a shot at redemption, and it's, like, this great American story. And if you think that Tiger Woods has totally been wrong and misled, it's, like, this is reassurance from the grave, and it's, like, you know, you are a great man. You can come back to it. It's, like, it seems like they tried really hard while doing something controversial, which itself, like, we are currently advertising for Nike by talking about this, so
yeah,
clearly
yeah.
success there. But, yeah. you know, beyond that, like, it seems like they tried to sort of bridge that middle ground and do something where it makes everybody, you know, everybody happy or at least intrigued or think that Nike is on their side about the whole thing, which, you know, sounds like they did a decent job of.
Not to not to derail the debate, but am I the only one here that is not taking a measured opinion of the commercial campaign and just throwing it all out the window because Tiger Woods is a horrible person and Nike is a horrible corporation and who cares how they try to portray themselves in the media?
Well, see, but I mean, Clea, I think, is going to have something to say about
American
this.
American politics, right? But we still... We need something to talk about.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, Clea probably... I think Clea would have something to say about
I would disagree with you about whether he's an awful person, but I don't know. I didn't see the commercial, so I don't really feel like I can weigh in on...
I mean, actually, like, I've never liked Tiger Woods, even before the whole scandal, so I'm not particularly weighing this on his infidelity. It's just more that he's a popular figure who has a chance to be politically significant, and he's made the choice not in any way to engage politically or to have any message or anything to say. He just wants to pump as much money into his out of his name as possible. And just by virtue of that, I think he's a rather useless yet talented human being.
Doesn't that apply to almost every major sports figure, though?
Almost.
Like all
not,
the
you know, not Muhammad Ali.
No, not Muhammad Ali, not Jim Brown.
Oh, gosh. Can I say something here?
Sure.
There's this yoga site that I get newsletters from, and I keep meaning to post one of the I think it's every month or every other week or something like that. They have a video of a new new pose that they're teaching you to do. And I really thought about posting one because the woman that does it is just – she never breaks a smile. She has a smile the whole, like, 10 minutes. And there was one where it was for anger management, and it was just so funny her describing anger and then the thing that – the different exercises to do with, like, this unbreakable smile. But the most recent one was how to increase wealth. And, of course, wealth is not just money. It's other creative – avenues, other ways that you can bring things to your life.
It's also gold bullion.
But the what they do is that there's this particular move that they're supposed to do, repeating it for 3 minutes, and as they do it, they're supposed to say "hut," and they're supposed to pull in their abdomen and say "hut," and I thought it was so funny.
Then someone says "hike."
Yeah. Exercise over.
So, anyway, I thought of that because, of, like, the whole sports thing and bringing wealth and then sports people.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, and then the yoga person was not political and what the hell. It's like, I can see the, exactly. I can see the political side.
She could be
side.
Using these huts for greatness.
Exactly.
So it's always so interesting that you said that, Russ, because I think, you know, I think I never thought about it because I always just thought, well, he was innately making a difference by holding it together as a semi-black man in a white, really racist sport. And so I think I never really thought about that. But you're right. I mean, it's. I mean, he should go above and beyond
that. Yeah, a wonderful example
that
he set as the first, you know, black man to reach such heights in his sport. The example he set is become a corporate shill. Then you're just like the white man. Good job,
you know,
Tiger.
I have to completely disagree with both you guys about that. I really think that you can be a political activist if you choose to be. I think that if you are, because I think it's unfair to say all he did was basically make money from his name. I mean, Madonna is an example of a no talent, of someone who has no talent and has made money off of her name.
She doesn't have
you know,
no talent.
Tiger Woods, that's true. That's fair enough. Tiger Woods is a supremely gifted, you know, probably the greatest golfer who's ever lived. And I think there's something to be said simply for being as good at that as you possibly can be. Like, I don't think that in any way he has an obligation to be politically active unless he wants to be. I mean, I think this idea that he's got, and also if he were a supremely gifted white athlete, would we be expecting him to do the same? So because he's supremely gifted and black, his job is to, you know, hold the torch politically. I completely disagree. I think it's nice if he wants to be politically active, but I think the idea that he has to be is completely not true.
I mean, he was trained from a fetus to play golf. Like, it's not that surprising that ended up being what he was the best in the world at, you know? I just don't see...
There are lots of people who try to train their kids to be great athletes
who don't follow through. Honestly, I think that there are probably a handful of people who've had as much golf training as Tiger Woods. And this is all, you know... Partially, this is influenced by my reading of Outliers and the idea that all successful people were given opportunities that other people don't necessarily have, and it's much less related to the genetic aspects and things like that than, you know, we tend to think as a culture. But honestly, like, if you're an athletically inclined person and you do nothing but play golf from the time that you're 1 year old, you're going to be one of the best golfers in the world, barring injury, and there's pretty much nothing that will stop you.
I don't agree with that. I think that's completely not true. There are plenty, in tennis as an example, there are lots of people who are known popularly as tennis bums. There was a guy named was Tim Wilkinson who literally did nothing but play tennis from the age of two and had training, lessons, did nothing but play tennis, and he never wrote, you know, he got to maybe 50th in the world, and that was it, because he didn't have the talent to be able to go further. I think, first of all, not only do you not have the talent in that case, he also didn't have the focus. And I think that's the thing. Like, you can say what you like, but given what it is that Woods went through, all of which is his own problem, by the way. I mean, this is a problem of his own making. But all of the scrutiny that he went into, just from an athletic point of view, the fact that a guy could, in what is arguably the mentally toughest thing to do, which is golf is basically just a mental game above all else, the fact that he was able to come in fourth at a tournament after missing whatever it was, 5 months and not doing competitive play, given that incredible swirl, I think is pretty extraordinary just as an athletic achievement. Now, that's
well,
not
obviously
talking about
he's
him
able
as a person.
Compartmentalize. I mean, if he's able to
that's true. Yeah. Yeah, I know
juggle 10 women at one time.
But it's
I mean,
focus.
I guess he...
You know, I think it's focus that's key. And he focused with each woman, very much so, a lot.
I mean, I'm almost thinking he has an unfair advantage that's not real. You know, it's not fair to the rest of the people. I mean, obviously this man has an amazing gift.
I mean, I guess my argument is just that he's not a role model. I mean, yes, he's a fantastically talented, amazing golfer because that's what he has devoted his life to, and God bless him. And that's it. I mean, and he'll make a lot of money, and everyone will want to be like him, even people who don't train to play golf from the time they're fetuses, which is...
But, Russ, when has he tried to be a role model? I mean, when has he ever wanted to be one?
When he puts his face on a commercial saying, be like me and buy my products, I think that comes along with it.
That's on them, not on him. If they're stupid enough to look at him as a role model, that's their problem.
He has a multi-billion-dollar advertising campaign building him up as this great person, which he is.
As a great person or as a great golfer?
As a great golfer, but also as a role model in general. It's not just like be a golfer like Tiger Woods. That Tiger Woods is supposed to, according to his sponsors, Tiger Woods is supposed to embody or represent something larger about, you know, cross-cultural norms or like going against racism or something that he's supposed to embody that I don't think is in his personality
at all. Not true. It's something larger about his ability to achieve, not about his ability to accomplish what he's accomplished because of his race. I think this is an issue of achievement. And I think that, by the way, is different from a lot of athletes. If you look at a guy like Tiki Barber made his reputation, and I guess he recently had some controversy about this, but he made his reputation not just on being an athlete, but on being a good guy. He specifically went out of his way to say, I think I have to be more than an athlete. I think I have to be someone that stands out, that can, you know, be a role model for the kids, blah, 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 blah. He specifically went out of his way to do that. So then when he falls, well, that's a big problem. But Tiger Woods has never said or claimed to be anything other than just a supremely talented, great golfer who's very focused and achieves.
Did Tiki Barber fall? You know,
yeah, Tiki Barber had something happened, I heard, where there was some, like, incident. I don't know the details of it at all. But
maybe
the point
it was Ronde
is that,
Barber, his twin brother, trying
exactly,
to
exactly.
His
it wasn't me, it was Ronde. No, but, like, I mean, you know, de facto, I guess these guys become role models. But I think that, really, he has never claimed to be anything other than just some guy who achieves. I don't, you know.
Now I have to go on the internet to challenge your statement. Let's see. Has Tiger Woods ever represented himself as a role model?
Remember, that's representing himself.
What do you say, internet?
That's not some blog saying, I love Tiger Woods, which he has no control over.
What I would just challenge is that I think it's a bit artificial to say that simply because someone's branding themselves in the opportunity to make money, that that's them putting themselves out there as a role model. I mean, I know where you're coming from in that that's what's when a company buys a person's brand, they're doing so because they hope people will see that this other person likes this product and therefore they'll buy it. But I don't really think anyone is claiming that when he says Gillette 500 blade shaver is what I use, that people are saying, gosh, you know, that role model Tiger, he's really guiding my son to become a better man. I mean, I just don't see.
I mean, honestly, in the Gillette commercials, like, his actual actions that have come out in this situation are probably what he's role modeling more than, like, you know, his character.
Yeah, that's exactly
honestly.
Right.
Like, right? Like, Gillette should
check
be doubling
out how smooth
that.
My face is, ladies.
Which is, like, you know, sexy, smooth, close, comfortable, you know, like,
yeah,
like
yeah, exactly.
Totally the reputation. I mean, I'm not even kidding, you know, like, I think that's
yeah,
actually
right.
it is actually, you know, it's like, wow, he's really got game, you know? So, you know, I think that both sides are sort of right in this debate to a certain extent. Like, I think there's obviously a de facto, like, modelization, pedestalization of anyone who we
nice pedestalization
revere, yeah,
pedestalization,
you know, like, who we revere and is successful in our society, because obviously they wouldn't make good sponsorship candidates if they were not perceived by some people as role models, like in or outside of their sport. At the same time, like, that mere de facto thing, I don't think necessarily carries with it. I mean, beyond, like, obligations that everybody has that nobody acts on, right? Like, everybody should be a saint, but very few people are. Like, beyond that, like, I don't think we hold anyone else to that standard. I don't think Russ holds Derek Jeter or Alex Rodriguez to that standard, you know? And so why right. do we have to hold Tiger to just because
okay.
they got in his face?
Quote, if you are given the chance to be a role model, I think you should always take it because you can influence a person's life in a positive light, and that's what I want to do. That's what it's all about, Tiger Woods.
From what time and where? And
I don't know. It's from BrainyQuotes.com.
BrainyQuotes.com. Well, that certainly solves it then.
I'm sure he said that. I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he said something like
how
that.
How would it undermine his sponsorship possibilities to say something like that? Like, that's only... That's
I mean, like, to me, like, if you look at... Here's an example, okay? The reason that the... Just to keep it on the sports level. The reason that the Maguire situation with steroids was so much worse... was because Maguire made this big thing out of, you know, I want to make sure that the Roger Maris family feels connected to all this, and I want to make sure they're along for the ride. And when he hit the home run, he went over and he was hugging them in the stands, and it was all BS. I mean, so he made a lot of his whole, you know, sort of quest for glory was that here's the Paul Bunyan type Big Mac who, you know, does everything through his strength and his strong right arm, and, you know, blah 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 blah, and he's a really good guy, and, you know, and it turns out that that's all BS. And deliberately BS,
and he knew it was BS.
Why
is that BS more than anything that was hidden from people? Like, why is that objectively more BS than...
Because he went out of his way as part of the reason that you should root for him was because I'm a good guy. Look at what I'm doing for the Roger Maris family. You know, here's why you're naming streets after me and all this, because I'm not just this. I'm also a good person who, you know, is a role model for baseball. You know, so I think there's a difference between that and someone, you know, who answers in an interview question, yeah, sure, I'll be a role model. But I mean, Tiger Woods didn't go out of his way to, like, you know, pat Jack Nicklaus on the back as he was going and saying, you know, well, I want to make sure that I'm respectful to the Nicklaus memory. And then, I mean, Maguire, half of that chase was about how I want to be so deeply respectful to the Marises and bringing the family along and paying for their hotel. And all that stuff was garbage. And he knew it. So
just
that,
because
to me,
he injected steroids into his
body?
Of course.
Sense.
And then he lied. Well, wait, what do you mean it doesn't make any sense? He not only ejected steroids in his buddy, then sat in front of Congress and lied about it. Of course it's the same thing.
He didn't lie about it. He just said, I don't want to talk about the past.
Oh, come on, guys.
He said, I don't want to talk about the past, that was the worst performance. And this is the present. And what's...
right, which is why it was the worst performance and why people like Hank Aaron said that it was a despicable display, right? Because he didn't do bad. I mean, give me a break. It was one of the most disgusting displays ever in the public forum from a sports star. And that's the reason that he then went into hiding for years and why St. Louis rapidly, you know, did everything they could to erase his name, like, you know, laser tattoo removal. They were erasing his name from every street sign in St. Louis.
Other than that, the venue was Congress. Is it any less despicable that Tiger is calling up some woman and begging
sure,
her to
it's much
erase
less
him
despicable
from herself because his
it,
wife's going to find out that he's been having an affair with her?
Of course it is, because it's a woman, it's a guy having a private affair. That makes him privately bad. It certainly doesn't make him publicly despicable. It makes him a privately bad person.
You're defending adultery is better than steroid use?
No, I'm defending the fact that there's a moral double standard in this country and that adultery is not nearly the big deal that someone who is literally cheating the game is. Was Tiger Woods cheating the game or was he cheating on his wife? It doesn't
make
him a good person.
Cheating a life bond is worse or is not as bad as cheating in a game.
Absolutely. One is a private situation and one is a public situation.
So Russ
one is involved
have
in a public game.
Cheated on his girlfriend instead of cheating at Racco. Like, what?
I don't know what you guys are talking about. This has nothing to do with should. It's a matter of if you're comparing the two of them. I don't even know how you can possibly think that this is an issue. There's one that involves cheating the game. It literally affects the game itself. Then there's someone who is cheating in his personal life. That means he's not someone I want over for dinner, but it also means that I shouldn't be sitting around passing judgment on someone from afar because he sleeps around. I mean, I wouldn't marry him, okay? If I were a woman, I mean, he's a bad person.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I'm going to make some comment about his public influence. influence on the game. He didn't influence the game. This was, you know, it's only because of the hyper-puritanical nature of society that we jump all over him because of this whole thing.
Here's my next question.
And again, I'm not defending what he did. He did a terrible thing, but come on, let's be honest here. Like, it's a private thing as opposed to something which affects the public game.
I get your point, Greg, and I think that it's valid. And I'm just wondering, like, do any of us really care about golf or the purity of golf or the historical context of golf? I don't think any of us care about that.
No, but
we like Tiger Woods because he's a significant figure and he's just better at it, at whatever he's good at than everyone else in the world. And that's why we care about Tiger, not because of any loyalty to the purity of the history of golf or the way that he lifts golf up or makes golf. None of us care about golf. We just find Tiger Woods an interesting figure to talk about.
I think that's true, although we're not the target audience. I mean, there are a lot of people who do admire those things. And I mean, yeah, I'm not a golf fan. So
I mean, part of why he's such a big moneymaker is he's drawn many, many casual fans to watch golf who didn't care about it before because of his significance as a person, not really as a golfer per se. I mean, other than the fact that he's just that much better than everyone else in the world at golf. But it could have, you know, he could have been, maybe not, he could have been an air hockey player if he was that much better than everyone else in the world at air hockey.
Tiger Woods, the air hockey player.
You know, black Korean to be great at air hockey, and perhaps he would have the same significance.
Can you imagine if he was like a great professional bowler? Like he was the greatest bowler ever, and then this happened, and he's like so much better than everybody else. Well, you know, there was a while where they were trying to put him along with Roger Federer as the greatest two, because they're also friends. And it was like, here you have a legendary Nike tennis figure and a legendary golf figure. Well, yeah, of course. But, you know, like, I guess, yeah, I mean, I you know, I take your point, Russ, but I guess, you know, I think the reason people are drawn into it is because they're amazed at how much better he is. I mean, there's a reason, like, golf is an old sport. I mean, it's been around for a long time, and the fact that he achieves what he's achieved, and he's doing it at a relatively young age, especially from golf terms, he's, like, you know, incredibly young, that's the sort of thing that everyone finds, you know, amazing about him. You know, when he won, I think it was his first Masters, he won by, like, 12 strokes. I mean, that was just unheard of at the time. So I think that, you know, the casual fan is brought in because of, you know, his consistent excellence, and the non-casual fan would probably have all this stuff about the purity of the game, and they would care. I mean, you're right. I certainly don't care about that stuff, but I do care about someone who supremely achieves athletically. That's all. Which I would think you would too, Russ. You're not someone, you believe in dynasties and, you know, have teams buy up all their players and win 150 games, right? Don't you?
I mean, yeah, without your not obvious stab at the Yankees. I mean, yeah, I am very much interested in transcendent athletes and transcendent humans in general.
Well, there you go.
And what makes them have this quality?
So you thought of him as transcendent because he was a person, not because he was a great athlete.
He was transcendent because he was just the best in history at his given avocation.
Okay, well then how has that changed? That's the thing I don't get. How has that changed?
Well, it hasn't changed, which is what I said initially, which is I don't really care that much about the infidelity, honestly, because I don't care about Tiger Woods that much.
Okay.
Because I'm not a big golf fan, but also because I think that when you reach that level of transcendence, it is your duty as a human being to try to positively impact the lives of as many human beings as you can. And he has failed to do that. And that's my you know, measuring stick for that type of greatness.
Then why do you like Derek Jeter?
You know what? I like Derek Jeter, but I don't hold up Derek Jeter as some, like, historical figure. I enjoy rooting for him, and I enjoy, in a baseball context, he's a lot of fun to watch. And that's about it. I don't think he's, you know, he's not one of my favorite human beings in the world.
I don't know, man. Okay. I mean, what happens if he wins a sixth World Series? Yeah, exactly.
I like him. Yeah, as a Yankee fan, I like Derek Jeter because, okay, here are a few things I could say about Derek Jeter. Let's see if I can make this argument if I try to. First of all, he's known as like one of the most famous bachelors in New York City. So just the fact that he never chose to get married is on his side, because obviously he would be crazy infidelity man if he had the opportunity, which he does.
So he's avoided attachments. And
I don't know. I never follow these things because I don't care about the celebrity culture nonsense bullshit.
Yeah, he is. He's engaged to some.
Mariah Carey, five, whatever.
Hot woman. Yeah, right. Loving you. Sorry.
I do respect the fact that he's been with one team his entire career. I like athletes who do that. Mm-hmm. Who come up with
just not one woman.
What's that? Not one woman. Right. Some loyalty is, you know, if you're a Yankee fan, loyalty to the Yankees comes first. Right. Then
loyalty to women comes second.
Right. Good thing you never dated him.
And you know, he's obviously showed good leadership on the field. He plays a team sport, which Tiger Woods doesn't. So we get to see him interacting with other athletes in a way that we don't get to see Tiger Woods do, because Jeter's job is to motivate a group of people and to be a spokesperson for them and et cetera, et cetera. So in that sense, yeah, he's an excellent, obviously Hall of Fame caliber baseball player. And so I like him as a player. I mean, I like Josh Hamilton so much purely because of his talent that I made a YouTube video about him, but then found out that after working years to get himself off of heroin, as soon as he became a famous ball player, he regressed, went back on drugs, and his playing skills went back into the toilet. And then all of a sudden, you know, not such a...
So, I mean, but see, I think what Story was getting at, and I agree with him wholeheartedly, I can't imagine why Story and I would agree on the Yankees, is that Jeter... has been relentlessly apolitical. Jeter is the least quotable athlete ever. He has never said anything interesting in his life. You know, Jeter's entire time is just, well, 110%, blah, blah, blah. And he just goes out and does it on the field and then comes off the field. But he has never said anything even vaguely politically involved at
all.
And
you know what? That is a failing of Derek Jeter's. Okay. And I will totally stand by that. Absolutely.
My argument is just that I don't think sports figures ever get put into that scrutiny. So I think the argument is asymmetric when it comes up in regards to Tiger Woods. Like, I think almost no sports figure has ever been political. Like, occasionally non-American sports figures will try to raise awareness of their home country, and that's about it. And I think that that's just not something that, as sports fans, we would ever normally apply. And so I find it kind of a non sequitur.
I think that they've existed. They're just sort of rare, like Arthur Ashe or, you know, Muhammad Ali or, again, I mean,
Jackie Robinson
or Branch Rickey, too, as well.
Yeah,
Tiger Woods. Baseball, you would never make this argument. I guess that's what it is. That, like, Tiger Woods is only interesting to you as a potential political figure because you don't like golf, which is fine and fair enough. But I don't think it's like...
Well, I think Tiger Woods is... I think Tiger Woods annoys me because he's more famous than any player in baseball. And he's more in the news, so I have to read more about Tiger Woods than any player in baseball. And so, therefore... Yeah, I reserve these criticisms for him because his presence is annoying to me.
But see, that to me is an argument against dominance. I mean, so it's why is if
or golf.
If he's well or golf, that's fair enough. But I mean, like, if he's just supremely good at something, you know, I mean, so is he not supposed to be good at it so people don't focus on him? Like, the problem with Tiger Woods is that you can't get interviews with him, right? It's not like he goes running after cameras. It's just that Tiger Woods is super. I mean, look, you want to talk about a guy who's a media whore? Look at somebody like Peyton Manning, who does nothing but commercials all the time. I happen to like Peyton Manning, but I can understand people thinking, like, oh my God, so overexposed, blah, 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 blah.
I like Peyton Manning more because Peyton Manning seems more human. He has a sense of humor about himself.
I agree with that.
Tiger Woods expressed that before.
No, that's fair. I would agree with that, but that's a different issue. I mean, that has to do with how he conducts himself. But my point is that Tiger Woods is not ever running up to cameras and publicly seeking the spotlight. Certainly, he doesn't turn it away if it allows him to get money. I'm not claiming that he has
money. Maybe the reason for that is because his sponsors and handlers have been coddling him and protecting him from media scrutiny that would show that he doesn't live a role model-y type of life, and that's why he's so...
But how's that on him, though? Again, I guess my point is that on him or is that on them? Like, I just feel like your annoyance is sort of centered in the wrong place. I mean, it ought to be focused on the corporate people that, you know, do this, and the people who are like, Tiger Woods liked this, so I must like the 500 blade, razor.
Yeah, no, I mean,
like,
I do agree that, okay, I could totally agree with you and think that my annoyance should be directed at Nike, who is probably mostly responsible for making him into a role model as a human being and not Tiger Woods himself. But to some extent, Tiger Woods had to agree to this whole thing, right? It's not just like he signed a paper and then they decided to make him into a role model against his wishes. I mean, he went along with it with all of these branding campaigns and marketing campaigns. And
that's true, but let's be fair, though. I mean, look, all of us on this show do a little bit of the same sort of branding in an effort to get people to be more interested, more audience for our show. As authors, Story and I are both going to be looking to promote our work. You know, certainly Clea, as you know, and you, Russ, as a comedian, have done promotion to try to get people to come out to, you know, your gigs and stuff like that. I mean, so to a degree, all of us do this sort of promotion and getting people to come see us. I mean, we all do branding to a degree. That's the big buzzword in the industry. We'll never do it on the level that Tiger Woods does. But I think if someone came to you right now, and of course that's what we're hoping for in the near future, and came to you, Russ, and was like, hey, Russ, you know, as one of the main, you know, lead people in Mep Report, we would like to put this on Comedy Central and have you do a 10-minute segment on, you know, Jon Stewart, The Daily Show. Can you do that? I don't think any of us would turn that down, even if that meant that we were in some way being connected with something which, through some shadowy multinational connection, you know, is maybe not such a good corporation, because there are trade-offs. Like, we do that because that's going to give us exposure and allow us to get our views out there, even though it will mean that in the short term we might be, you know, sort of associating ourselves with people we wouldn't care to. Not that we would take a show on Fox, but if we took a show on Comedy Central, I don't think we would turn that down, would we?
Well, I think that I would have to think about it very carefully, and I think that your calculation is correct, is that the calculation is that you would decide how much of your integrity you want to sacrifice by putting your name in front of these corporations that you don't approve of, in the hopes that your message can be powerful enough that maybe it can undermine those corporations later on. Or, you know,
right.
You're still
yeah.
working towards a political end, which Tiger Woods never was. He was just working to make as much money as he could. So I think it's a different ends,
yeah.
even if it's the same means.
That's fair. This is reminding me a little bit of our discussion about the Oprah Book Club, and Story and I taking the side of, you know, the people, the guy who didn't want to be on the Oprah Book Club because he felt that would, like, taint his credibility because it was so popular. And we, Story and I, both thought that was ridiculous because we felt like, you know, come on, like, the reason you're writing in the first place is to communicate with lots of people.
Right.
Why wouldn't you do that just because it's on Oprah? You know, this reminds me of that.
No, I mean, yeah, I just don't think that, you know, sports figures are uniquely obliged any more than anybody else famous to take a political stance. A lot of people around them tell them that it's actually inadvisable for them to do so because it runs the risk of their fanhood and compromises their ability to make money. And, like, I think that that critique is a critique of our society writ large and not any given individual who, you know, sort of falls prey to it. Like, our society values the wrong thing. It doesn't value using your voice to make things better. It values money and this accumulation of wealth, especially for people who, I mean, you know, the big part of the Tiger Woods story that I don't think we've talked about, and I guess this whole show is going to be about Tiger Woods, but that's fine, is, like, part of his reputation is not just his greatness and his massive superiority as an athlete, but it's his reputation as a gatecrasher, right? Like, that because of his, you know, identity, because of his background, because of whatever else, like, golf as a, you know, refined gentleman's elite white boys club has been, you know, sort of torn asunder in those regards to mm-hmm. the benefit of the sport and to the mm-hmm. benefit of society. And that's, like, as every bit as much of the mystique of Tiger Woods as the amount by which he's beating people. And that combination is the dynamite. Like, that's the magic. It's the combination,
and I think,
that
part of my objection is that he ended up doing that by acting exactly like all of the elites that initially.
But my argument is that is almost the universal reality of people who are gatecrashers, right? Like, that very few people have the sort of foresight or the vision or the whatever else that, like, people who are gatecrashers in that way, especially economically, I think the first generation of people like that tend to be, like, the way that I prove my worth and prove the gatecrashing success and prove the sort of bootstrap story or the way that society was unjust before and is now becoming more just is by succeeding in the rubric that society uses to judge, which is mm-hmm. accumulation of wealth, accumulation of status, accumulation of sort of power for power's sake. And
Russ,
generally those people do that the first time. And then later generations or subsequent people, once it's been established, then say, well, wait a minute, let's look at political power also or something.
I mean, I don't know if I missed this part of the discussion, but did we ever at one point say, well, what if he had created numerous charities? When you're talking about political, or would that fall under that category, or does he have to come out? I'm sure that he has.
I'm almost positive that he has, and I'm sure he's donated lots of money to charity. I think he does it in the sort of generic tax write-off strategy that almost all rich people donate to charity without really being activists in any real sense.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, what if he actually really took on a cause of
absolutely? That's exactly what I'm asking of him.
But only did it by financial support. Didn't.
Right. Like, does he have to be marching on the front lines? Or, for example, the guy who's the presumptive one or number two draft in the NFL draft coming up, a guy named, I can't pronounce his first name, his last name is Sue. He's a defensive player from Nebraska. Just gave $2.1 million from the contract, or, you know, pledged that amount because he's going to make at least that, if not more, from whoever signs him in the first couple of picks in the draft. And he pledged that not just to the school's athletic program, he pledged it to the engineering school because he got a degree in engineering or something, and he wants to, you know, he thought that was really really important to him. Now, he did not then stand up and say, and here's why it's important for people who are of African descent to achieve in the sciences, and I demand that more school, you know, he basically just gave money. But, you know, so it seems to me that the argument would be, according to that your rubric, then that wouldn't be enough either, that he would need to be a sort of a activist, you know, as well as just someone who was a big donor to a significant program. And that wasn't just sort of mailing it in for tax write-off purposes. He was doing something that was a little bit unusual, as athletes go.
Okay, well, let me put it this way. If you can show me Tiger Woods' tax returns, and it shows that he donates an unusually large percentage of his income to charity, more so than people of his typical income bracket, then that would certainly ameliorate my criticisms. I mean, I think basically, like, story's right in that this is just part of what celebrity culture is, as Greg furiously looks IRS.gov for tax returns. I think that is right. That is what celebrity culture is, whether it's sports or otherwise. But I just think that, as Uncle Ben said, with great power comes great responsibility. And once you make a certain amount of money and you're secure and your family and your ancestors are secure for time in memoriam, then I think it's incumbent upon you as a human to say, well, you know, I've made more money than God. Now it's time to have a positive effect on the rest of society. And if you don't do that, then you fail as a human being. And I'm sorry that so many celebrities and so many athletes fail by that criteria, but they do. The end.
I'm just looking at the description of the Tiger Woods Foundation, which is, let's see, started in 1996. A Tiger Woods Learning Center, one-of-a-kind educational facility custom-built for the undeserved youth of Southern California and Los Angeles, I assume. Tiger's action plan is nationwide curricula based on goal-setting, career exploration, self-discovery through service learning. Earl Woods Scholarship Program offers a four-year college scholarship to hardworking students with demonstrated financial need and proven commitment to community service. Let's see. Raise more than Tiger Woods and no doubt raise more than $1 million for the TWLC at Tiger Jam 12 presented by AT&T at Mandalay Bay.
$1 million. Oh,
Tiger hosts the fifth annual block party that raises more than $500,000. I mean, in fairness, so that means that in 6 months he rose $1.5 million.
That's pitiful.
Which is like a Nike commercial, right?
Foundation reached over 400 students at the Ratchaburi Convent School located in Thailand. Let's see.
Greg.
I mean, you know.
Can you just open up the annual report?
I am. I'm looking at the history. This is
the
year
annual
by year.
Report. Just annual. Open it up.
Okay.
It's right there.
More than 8,000 young people.
No, don't read this stupid paragraph, Greg. Just open up the annual reports.
We invite you to view our annual report.
Gosh.
Here we go. Tiger Woods Foundation.
How to scrutinize celebrity figures with Clea Wilson.
Okay, Tiger's action plan successfully reached more than 250,000 young people, 10,000 teachers around the country. Let's see. Awarded grants to 75 youth-based organizations.
He wanted the numbers, Greg.
The numbers, right.
Stop when you see numbers and don't read. There's lots of pictures.
Look for numbers.
Look for numbers. Numbers will find your way. I just see lots of pictures.
Here
words.
We go. So they gave money to the following groups.
No. Those are words, Greg. Those are words.
Well, look, he didn't give a buck per. I don't think he's going to actually do that, you guys.
Hey.
Let's
give at, 10 bucks each.
Russ asked for his
Kiwanis Foundation,
Greg,
Mercy Health Clinic, Metropolitan Tulsa Urban League, Miriam's Kitchen, Mount Greg. Vernon High School, Neediest Kids,
that
Nelson Mandela Children's
page.
Fund,
look at that
Penn
list.
Center
it's
USA,
beautiful.
Potential Youth Foundation,
the Red Sox Foundation,
Salison Boys and Girls Club of Los Angeles, Thanks USA,
he gave to the Red Sox,
Health Trust,
he just lost Red Sox. He just lost
Tiger Woods Learning Center, Children of War Canada, Washington Jesuit Academy, Martin Luther King National Memorial Project, World Golf Foundation, Youth Sport Trust, DC Central Kitchen, Bill
Greg.
Dickey Scholarship Association, Big Brothers and
Funny.
Big Sisters, Georgetown University Hospital.
Is this really happening?
Yeah.
You get it.
There's lots of others. Okay, let's see.
All right, you know what? Let me summarize my position on Tiger Woods by paraphrasing French political philosopher Julian Benda.
Okay. He gave money to him, by the way.
There are two sets of principles. They are the principles of power and privilege and the principles of truth and justice. If you pursue truth and justice, it will always mean a diminution of power and privilege. If you pursue power and privilege, it will always be at the expense of truth and justice.
What was the name of that guy?
Let's find his tax return for France.
What's the name?
Julian Benda.
too.
The Julian Benda Foundation, $2,000.
That's Jubilee's Jumpstart Incorporated, Greg.
Sorry. My fault. Oh, man. Look, my point is I understand what Russ means, and there is a certain
a
sort of
genetic. Pitiful annual
it's
report.
Kind of like that. No, it's not. It's
oh,
not
my
pitiful.
God, that was bad.
No, it's not.
It was like probably 8 pages long, and four of the pages
it's got
four of the pages were full-page photos.
Yeah, because they're spotlighting a couple. That has nothing to do with it. The better point is that
with large breasts charity type voice.
Yes. The better point is that
Hooters
when you
them?
Go to when you go to something like the NBA and you see the stupid. If you guys watch NBA games, you see the NBA cares, and then you see some obviously photo op stage thing where like Chauncey Billups goes to some Boys and Girls Club for an hour and gets his photo, you know, taken repeatedly, and like the cameras are rolling as he bounces the ball twice, and then you know it says like he did some like, you know, We Fit program or whatever the heck it was. Like, that kind of thing clearly is staged and obvious. And I will certainly agree that Tiger Woods doesn't strike me as, like, super engaged in charity in the way that some of the athletes that kind of stand out do. He certainly wasn't politically involved like Jackie Robinson or Jim Brown or those people we've mentioned. My point simply is that I feel like you're holding him to a much higher standard than he would arguably hold himself. If the standard that his job is simply to achieve and that's what he's a role model on the basis
right.
of, well,
his
then
job
that's
as
what he
human
does.
Being goes beyond putting little balls in little holes.
Well, that's what Derek. I'm not even gonna.
God.
Sigh. Ladies and gentlemen. Russ double entendre. Goobrin. That was like a James Bond double entendre. That was like the octopusy quality. Yeah, I mean,
that's the last time he'll put those little balls in the holes.
Jeez. Russ was just building up. He's like, I really just want to get to jokes. Can I just get to the point where we can make jokes? But like, you know, because the thing
40
is...
40 minutes may have been worth that punchline. That was pretty good.
That was a setup. He was really wanted to set it up. But
talk about the slow build.
It's like, and bring down the hammer.
I want to talk about this real estate agent that I did. I went and looked at an apartment.
Good segue.
Speaking of,
and I think that it was one of the most
balls in holes.
Oh my god!
So Mr. Ball said to me,
"Okay,
so I went to look at this apartment." And he took me up to the apartment and he showed me the different rooms. Then he's like, okay, well you have to see the porch. You have to see the porch because there's two porches. So go in the back. And I'm asking him, okay, well is there any kind of parking? And he said, well there's a garage. I'm like, oh great. Well can we use the garage or can we pay for the garage? He's like, no, the owners use that for storage. I'm like, oh, okay. So then I look.
I thought you might want to know.
Yeah, so I look. Then I look out, you know, behind, and they'd been doing some construction. So there's a driveway going up to the house, and I was like, oh, well, that might be useful because the to get to the apartment, I have to go up pretty much 10 flights of stairs. And I said, oh, well, that's cool. He's like, yeah, they bought that house, they totaled it down, so now they have this whole block, and so they're making this driveway. I'm like, oh great, will we be able to use that? No, that's just for the owners to use to get to there. They're gonna have that just be kind of their lawn. Oh okay. Then I look down on the other side of the porch and I say, oh look, is that a garden? Oh yeah, that's a garden. They just they cleared out all the those trees and they're making a nice little garden. Isn't it beautiful? I'm like, yeah, it's really nice. Are we able to go down there? No, those are. That's just.
And actually, you'll be the gardeners if you're moving here. That's you'll actually be starting today. Please join us to manage
your bedroom.
At least this is a nice porch we're seeing these things from. I can use the porch, right? No, actually not.
Actually, it'll cost you $5 to be standing on this porch.
Like, actually, you're just running a hot water heater.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know what? So pretty much I get the impression that I'm here just to live in this space and pay you money so that they can have the sweet life.
To sleep, you just wrap your arms around the hot water boiler. Like, that's
exactly,
all that you have for space.
Yeah, it's like a childhood game. You have to be touching the hot water heater at all times, wherever you go in the apartment.
Safe.
Like,
I'm on base.
Well, you can use the fridge if you can reach it while your show is on the hot water heater. Yes.
If they tag you, the house goes into escrow.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what that means.
We're going to have to change the boiler. That means you're going to have to move out for a couple of days. Wait, what? Well, I mean, I'm sorry. You know, you just can't. Unless you want to keep your, you know, if you can just hold on to the old boiler as they're moving it out and then, like, connect to the new boiler.
Off to the boiler repair shop with you, boiler people.
Are there any other details in the contract? No, it's pretty boilerplate.
Oh,
God. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, there was one other one was that I was going out to the stair, leaving the apartment, and there's a little door there, and, it, and I said, oh, is that like a closet? He said, yeah, there's a closet.
Yes, that's where you sleep.
That's where we put the last person who asked this question.
Anyway, so I just thought it was, he was one of the worst real estate agents I've met in a long time.
Well, because from what you described, that
so
he wasn't
hard,
right, he wasn't changing his mood, right? Like he just
no,
quickly
he
like
was so
no,
upbeat
this is great.
And positive.
Yeah, no, you don't get that either.
He's
no,
like, God, these people, they such great landlords. They really go above and beyond. You 150%, like yeah, for themselves.
150%.
They just want to be near nice things, or like associated with nice things.
Exactly.
Someone, right? Like, you know, it's like you can sort of vicariously have the American dream.
I guess.
If you live
yeah.
Here. Like,
right.
It can be that it's possible. Other people
right.
live this way. You can
exactly.
That.
Exactly. That's like, it's like when we, I think I told the story before, but when we first came out here to Riverdale, this one real estate agent who was showing us apartments was like, oh, she showed us this one place. And she's like, oh, now I have to show you this now here. And so we drove her around and she's like, okay, go down here. And she takes us into Fieldston, which is a section of Riverdale, which is an old sort of money area where it's like tons of incredibly beautiful homes.
Multi-million-dollar homes.
And it's like, it's as close to a gated community without the gate. Like I'm sure if they could gate the community, they would.
Yeah, well, they have security cars that drive through.
Right. So it's like, and she's just like, and see, and here's this and that. And finally I'm like, and basically she was like, so these will be your neighbors. I'm like, okay, because clearly that's what I want, is to feel as if I'm near wealth. Because those are the people that I model myself after, you know, the people who simply make money and that's all they do is want to make money. Like, that way I can osmotically gain their skill in gaining wealth, which is really important to me and my wife, a professor and social worker, respectively. Like, hello? I mean,
this is how Tiger Woods ads work, right? Like, isn't this coming full circle? Like, this is the
it
idea
is.
Of a role model of, like, you can be a role model just by attaining success and wealth, and
I guess
other people
so.
Will want to be around you.
Yeah.
I guess so. Not. I will not be one of those people, but I guess so. Yeah.
I think that's fairly... Okay. I think the average American would relate to that perspective, would want to just be around those things. Because,
well, yeah, because they, even if these people are miserable, they're like, well, it worked out well for them. I'm like, well, no, actually, they committed suicide at 30. Well, yeah, but they really worked out well for them. And it's like, well, it didn't work out well for them, except if you base everything on their bottom line. And so since mm-hmm. everything in America is on the almighty dollar, I guess that's how we judge people,
exactly.
too. It's all about dollar yeah. signs, right?
And people also see it, like, for their own dollar signs, like, oh, if there are wealthy people around, the home values will go up. It's the same reason, like, people freak out about the homeless being in their neighborhood.
Sure.
Like, oh, God, people will see there's crime.
Well, and that was
exist.
A deliberate shift. Yeah. That was a deliberate shift in the 1980s. There's a book called The Politics of Rich and Poor, which outlines this, in which mm-hmm. Republicans made a conscious effort to make people of the middle class identify up rather than down. So rather
right.
than feeling like we're all in this together and we're trying to, you know, it became, I have to get up to where the wealthy are. And that's how we have, you know, 1% of the, you know, whatever it is now, 2 or 3% in this country controlling the top 90% of wealth came from that goal where everyone is always looking about how they can move up to, you know, the cool kids club and you know, rather than identifying with those below. And of course, from the rich point of view, it would obviously be horrific if everyone figured this out and all of a sudden 98% of the population was angry at the other 2%. That obviously is a very bad scenario. So
and that's
you know,
why they invented golf.
To keep those. Well, it is true that there's no more classic example. Just on the golf level, there is no better example of a more useless, you know, more, I mean, it is, you know, obviously coined the term country club syndrome, but it is the ultimate example of, you know, racism and just, you know, classism in America writ large. This idea that, well, we don't do this at Augusta because there's a certain way of thinking. I'm like, by which you mean a white way of thinking. You know, I mean, like, it's unbelievable that clubs can get away with what they get away with in terms of who they allow, what they permit, you know, and have all these people, club owners with names like, you know, Bubba and Zeke and things like that as their middle names, you know, calling the shots. It's amazing to me that those things then get looked at by anyone who isn't one of that specific niche group of people as being interesting. And I guess the Tiger Woods effect has meant that some people, as Story said, is a gatecrasher. It's just that in this case, the gatecrasher is kind of Rich himself. So I just never viewed Tiger Woods
as the whole point.
Right, but I never viewed him as a
poster boy with this type of mentality of he makes a dream real.
Right.
Like, this is the bootstrap story, like, in the ultimate. Like, he makes
but as Russ points out,
if you just work hard
he
enough,
isn't a gatecrasher, though.
Practice enough, and that's
right.
And that is the subtext of every one of his commercials. Like, I don't know if it's about a role model or not, like, as far as his character, but as far as a role model for the Republican bootstrap story, every one of his commercials has as the subtext, I just worked a little harder than everybody else. I had dedication. I had focus. I drank this energy drink. I wore these shoes. And therefore...
yeah.
You know,
Well, but see, the thing about the Republican bootstrap problem...
I was able to crash in and become wealthy and,
right.
and be, you know, admired by men and
But the only thing that I disagree with there a little bit, Story, is that the issue is that he really did... See, he's an unusually focused, extraordinary athlete. The problem is a lot of the Republican bootstrap stories are bullshit from the word go. You know, George W. Bush was not a Texas cowboy who grew up, you know, pulled himself up by his bootstrap. You know, he and his father are blue blood all the way. They come from old money. They went to Yale. You know, there's not a bit of pull yourself up by your bootstraps anywhere. It's the fact that they lie. It's that the American myth of, you know, I can pull myself up from the bootstraps is a lie. It's not that, you know, you find someone like Tiger Woods who did work really hard. I don't think that's buying into the myth as much as somebody who just lies about it and pretends that the myth existed for them.
No, I mean, it's designed to be that way. Obviously, the number of sports figures in this country who make, you know, like $1 million, let alone even like, you know, beyond a living wage, are minuscule, right? I mean, obviously,
right.
Your actual odds, it's like functionally a lottery, right? So, it's like saying this person won the lottery, therefore the bootstrap story exists because they just
right.
kept buying tickets and
right.
working their number scheme and they knew what they were doing. So, obviously,
yep.
on face, it's, you know, and sports itself is not about. You know, I mean, it's about working hard in this very specific, weird niche way that our society sort of uniquely values that is, you know, has very little to do with work in the sense that most Republicans mean it. So obviously, like, there are innate flaws with it. However, the effect is the same. The effect is very deliberately to try to create that aura. Nevertheless, yeah, maybe it's not as bad as someone who just like made up their deep down roots, but I think it's actually more pernicious because it actually affects more people because there is enough truth to it to make it seem real because Tiger Woods was not wealthy in, you know, when he was born. And so it seems more real than like if you just look up George Bush and say, oh, well, how did he go to Yale with crappy grades and blah, 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 blah,
right.
blah. Then you can like fact check the story and disbelieve it with Tiger
yeah,
Woods.
Right.
Like
yeah,
objectively,
yeah.
it is a true story. Story, and it doesn't matter how exceptional or ridiculous that is as a model for anybody else, or
then,
the fact that it has to do only with the fact that we happen to revere celebrity sports figures in this weird way in our society.
And
it has
yeah.
nothing to do
to
with
anything. To piggyback on that point, I think that because Tiger Woods is such a was such a beloved character because of his backstory, that makes his influence that much more pernicious because now the people that follow him and treat him as a role model who wouldn't necessarily follow these other jokers and these other liars and other characters are swept into the myth, whereas before they might have served, you know, some useful political purpose with their lives or they might have chose to remedy social ills, but now instead they decided to follow in the footsteps of Tiger Woods.
Amen.
Yeah, I mean, I think what society needs more of is something for the people who don't have that talent to feel that they have achieved. That's what needs to happen. Rather than creating expectation levels that either you are Tiger Woods or you're nobody, you know, there ought to be value placed on things that are more important. You're working in a nonprofit for, you know, the good of others is, you know, equally valuable and you can be have made an incredible achievement by doing that rather than you're a failure unless you're Bill Gates. And that, I think, is the problem, is that since everything is based upon dollar signs alone, alone, even when you have a situation like a guy like Tiger Woods. I think rather than everyone saying, let's, you know, kick the hell out of Tiger Woods, the better way to do it is, why don't we look at these other people who don't have the attention paid to them and literally shift the way that our society values its members, you know, and values the people that contribute to it. And I think that's the issue, is changing the expectation level, you know, rather than just focusing on money first and athletic achievement second.
The idea, the entire idea of a celebrity, though, let alone a celebrity endorsement, is antithetical to that concept. Like,
yeah,
it is,
sure.
The celebrity-based culture we live in has been very carefully crafted by people who want society to look the way that it actually does, because that makes the most money for corporations.
That would
because
be cool, though, if
corporations can profit by valuing celebrities.
Uh-huh. That would be cool, though, if Nike like did this whole series of commercials where they said, they just highlighted people in different fields that have made huge, like, changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so
but
they
even
found,
that is
like,
a form of celebrity, right? Like, then, like, that effect, like, I see where you're going. It's like the Bud Light Real American Heroes, except not sarcastic.
Real you know, end of genius!
Exactly. Right, you know, it's like, this person really helps people, you know, and, like, but I mean,
Mr.
I think that
Taka
commercial was effective,
inventor.
Like, largely because it shows exactly how far we are from really believing that, right? But more to the point, like, unless you did it in that same style of just sort of types of people, if you actually single out individuals, all you're doing is picking those people for newfound celebrity. And yeah, maybe you pick them out of the rough, and maybe they deserve it in some way more than a sports figure.
Oh, in the rough.
But then they
hitting
just
out
become
of the bunker.
Celebrities Sorry. And have their same issue, like the same susceptibility and the same possibility of becoming corrupted celebrities. So
that's
I don't
true.
Think that well, it just cycle. It creates a cycle in a new direction. You actually have to like elevate, you know, whole
a class of people.
Of
yeah,
people.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yep. So fine. So I have a way to solve this. I have a way to solve this, and the way to solve this is we need a real MEP of genius, except that it won't be an individual, it's a class of people. So every show, one of us nominates a real MEP of genius, and it's a class of people that we can literally elevate.
I think it's just going to sound like the Bud Light thing, though. I think it's so
no,
it's
a class of people.
Opposite the way that we think about things.
Why is he so against the Bud Light thing, Greg?
You don't like the Bud Light thing.
So awesome.
A class of people? Like illegal immigrants?
Shooter guy, yeah.
What are we talking about?
No, a group. Like a discrete group. A discrete group. A discrete group, yes.
Seriously.
Our real MEP of the week. Our real MEP of the week is illegal immigrants.
I mean, those are like, real bootstrap stories, except they still get shat on in our society.
Mr.
Like
illegal
yeah.
immigrant guy.
Okay, but he's singing the song.
Illegal immigrant.
Help us. Oh God.
You've broken some strange laws, but truthfully, you done what matters.
Why did you break those laws?
You know that you could achieve as long as no one catches you first.
Run really fast.
Because you're plucking the grapes that we need for our Merlot, we think.
I love that wine.
Mr. Real Map of Genius. There it is. Real MEP of genius. Stories like player left. God damn you all. Curse you all. So fine. So illegal immigrants have been glorified by the MEP report. No one else is going to glorify them. All you're going to see is racism now over the next 6 months. So, you know, we might as well. Somebody has to glorify them.
Successful glorification. Oh, boy.
Okay, story. So what we need to do... But the problem is, as you say, we can't like spotlight an individual and put him on the because that's making him a celebrity. So other than just saying we like illegal immigrants, like how do you want us to do
sounds
it?
Sounds
you know?
Like farce. That's the whole point, is that this is how insidiously our culture has been constructed to care about individual success.
Fine, we're countercultural in the MEP report. Let's figure out a way to counter
like
the trend.
Farce. There's no way to do it, especially from a comedy podcast.
You know? Okay, well, that's a problem, yes.
There's no way to do
yes,
it.
Yes, there is. Russ,
sounded,
speak very seriously.
Like farce.
Russ, use your serious
voice. I challenge you guys. Okay, by the time that the next show is posted, between the posting of MEP Report 120 and MEP Report 121, find a way to do this in a highlighted post that sounds sincere, that doesn't sound like it's making fun of
itself. That gives us roughly 8 months to work on this.
Russ!
Stop.
Darn it, you guys. Just stop doing that shit.
No, seriously. This is my throwdown. Any of the three of you, do it.
Wait a minute, though.
So I'm throwing down the challenge.
See, I don't agree with you, though.
That highlights a class of people in an elevating way, the way we're talking about.
Define class.
Anyway, sound like parody or farce.
Russ, it's a literature class, okay? It's a literature class at St. John's.
My graduating class.
It's my literature class at St. John's.
Can we have some definitions? I mean, like
a
wine
group of underappreciated people. An
underappreciated group of people. Underappreciated. That's true. How about external hard drive collectors? That's a discrete group of people.
Classy.
My argument is getting so beaten back by your...
Here, but look, I actually do have a serious response to that, and that is that I actually posted... Now, obviously, as we know, and I don't want to get into a political discussion about Obama, but because we disagree pretty strongly on this.
Yes, Obama, but not a celebrity figure, an underappreciated, unknown class of people.
Well, no.
I
wasn't making a point about that. My point was simply that I made a serious post sort of supporting whatever, you know, several things that he had done. So I think it's possible to do that. If your point is, so your point is that we cannot
both
be serious.
My point is there's something innate about highlighting underappreciated groups of people that innately sounds like farce. And yeah, obviously, yes. You can support a celebrity, a beleaguered celebrity. People do this every day. Like the whole Tiger Woods thing, the whole blogosphere about that or about Obama. Like people have supporters and detractors on an individual level all the time.
So we need to support someone who is uninteresting to everyone, basically.
A group of people. Because I think that the American perspective is just too biased against this kind of perspective. I think that we're too... broken. Like maybe intergenerationally we could start to work against it, but I think that it will sound like comedy.
Okay,
what
are we trying to do? We're trying to glorify what they do? We're trying to bring their contributions to light? Is this the objective?
Yeah. Glorify what they do, bring their contributions to light, and do so without in any way having a sense of humor at all.
Well, I mean, without it sounding we are undercutting our argument through humor.
Not
I mean,
being
you
satirical.
Can make fun of Republicans in it if you want, but like...
Not being satirical about
yeah,
that. I get
exactly.
it. Yeah, that's
what
fine.
About like Code Pink, the feminist protestors? Can we do that? Is that a class of people or is that just a group of people?
I mean, it has to be people haven't heard of, right? Like, and not like, you know, janitors. I've heard of janitors, but like they are sort of like
the guys that are the mopping, right?
Heard of that. You know what I'm saying, though? Like, they
Real
are sort
mops,
of as a collective
genius.
Celebrity. Like, I don't think like a known organization that's like publicly recognized by the average American counts, right? Like, or people who come together to try to create celebrity, like people who
I don't
are just
know,
doing
here,
their
I don't
stuff.
Know. I don't know. If they get a spotlight, at most, maybe they get they're a celebrity, quote unquote, for a couple days, weeks, top story. So, I mean, I really don't think that, I mean, when you're talking about Nike giving, you know, someone a contract, that's going to really affect them as a celebrity. But having one commercial of a one guy who's like found the vaccination for bubble butt, you know, I mean, I don't think
God bless you, sir.
Step forward. Clears protected classes, bubble butt vaccinators. Real map of genius. Okay. First, we need to find a group that is not defined as farce by itself. Okay, if it defines it, what do? I vaccinate against bubble
butt. It's really hard. What I'm saying is, Clea, there is a real argument here. The argument is people who organize like Code Pink are part of the culture of valuing celebrity that Greg wants to work against, right?
I don't think that was a good example, but I was actually going against the whole idea of a class of people. I mean, I was going back to our previous example of I really don't see a problem with like John Smith getting noted on a Nike commercial that will run for maybe a couple of weeks. And maybe for a couple of months he might get some popularity, but then he's going to be off the radar screen again. And I don't really think you can consider that celebrity.
But I think it is because you still, like, at the end of the day, if you never have your 15 minutes, if you never have a place where people know your name, then you feel worth less. And that does not achieve Greg's goal of having
the
average person or the widespread person actually feel valued, even if no one recognizes them. That just means that, like, there's a bunch of, you know, there's a bunch of things.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
Exactly. But seriously, that's what it's all about, right? Because then, sure, there are people toiling in obscurity in fields that normally wouldn't create celebrity who now feel inspired to, like, do something where they get recognized. I mean, like, so there was a newscast. I forget what it was. Like, ABC used to do this, right? Like, they had their person of the week, and they often, like, dug up people in the rough who they highlighted who were, like, you know, teachers who were making a real difference in the Newark, New Jersey school or whatever else. And, yeah, maybe their celebrity was fleeting, and they didn't actually, like, sell out or become pernicious celebrity people, although in the era of the internet they might. But that's not my argument, because the argument is still that society is still constructed, that you are worth something if people end up knowing your name, you aren't if you aren't. And that means that 99.9% of people still feel like crap under that rubric. Like, at the end of their life, at the end of the day, they feel like garbage because they haven't achieved that. Even if someone who's like them, who toils away, in fact, it makes it even worse because they say, what is that teacher doing that I'm not? I'm doing just as much stuff. Why did they get recognized?
Yeah, like, I know what you mean, Story, because it's too lottery-oriented. I understand that, because it's all lottery again. Yeah.
It's still about, you are, in the end of the day, judged by whether people knew your name, whether you achieved celebrity, even if it was just 15 minutes, even if it was 2 minutes, that you, at some point, were held up and honored as, this is the model, this is the example, because that's the way it's all designed.
Okay, so question. For us to win this challenge, how can we avoid being corrupted by using the same commodity of celebrity that is corrupting everyone else? Like,
I mean,
what's the point?
That's why it's a hard challenge, right? Like,
but what is the challenge then?
Because
even if you manage to give them this commodity, then they're corrupted by it.
That's why you have to elevate millions of people. That's what I'm saying. That's why it's hard. Or at least, you know, tens of thousands. You have to elevate
the
whole
fine.
Group.
I can, but we can elevate that. There are tens of thousands of illegal immigrants.
So the objective is to diffuse and dilute the commodity such that we begin to make it worthless.
Right.
Well, I mean, I'm playing in Greg's ball field, right? Like,
celebrity.
I don't necessarily think that, like, you know, I mean, I sort of, like, as someone who aspires to celebrity and has sort of bought into this system, like, I think that the end, you know, that it's sort of worth it to a certain extent. And I think it may be in some ways impossible on a planet of 7 billion people to avoid this. But I'm trying to play ball with Greg's complaint and sort of say in good faith that there may be a way around it. And so this is the only way that I can see. But it is a challenge because I'm not sure you can do it. So,
well,
especially,
I mean,
within the American perspective. So
I don't know what I think. I mean, you know, as we've talked about, since obviously I – you know, would hope to be successful as an author and therefore, and or a musician, and would hope for people to be able to, but see, again, I think there, the means is really, I'm sorry, the ends are really what matter. You know, my goal there, as Russ pointed out, is to, I mean, as I guess, forget it was Russ or Story pointed at this out, is to get my voice out there and to get my stuff read or heard, you know, by as many people as possible.
Right.
So
and the end goal
that's,
is changing people's minds, which I share completely. I think
so
all
in that
four
sense,
of us probably feel that way about our lives. And,
but that story is different than celebrity for the sake only of celebrity. See, I feel like there's a class of people that are only about celebrity, you know, and that's the danger.
Absolutely. But
to be famous for being famous, you know.
Right. And I think there are plenty of examples of both. But the point is, whatever you want to do with your celebrity when you eventually get it, I think still have the culture of celebrity being valued. Like, you can do whatever you want once you.
We have to make it topical.
That's what we have to do. That's what we have to do, is make it topical. And speaking of making it topical, one of the ways to do that is to not go on over long. And since we have gone on rather long, we should close up shop for now. But we want to thank everyone for listening. And if you have a nomination for Real Mep of Genius in a way that can be done without satirizing that group and lift up millions of people at once,
if you succeed, we'll post it on the page.
Please do so. We will give you credit for it and thereby give you celebrity, even though we're going, oh, my God.
No!
So that's check out the site. Say goodbye, everybody.
Some things I think they might be right.
Old men dancing.
Crowding up my dreams, making me so sad. Scared to death in the middle of the night.
The Mep Report is brought to you by a cadre of emu farmers and Australian government organisations. No, I'm just kidding. The Mep Report's an independent podcast, not affiliated with Emus or the Emu Gland Farming Association. You can mail the Meppers via the electronic mail at RussClearStoryAndGreg@MepReport.com. Feel free to propagate the website, which is at MepReport.com, and visiting your various social networking organizations on the internet to propagate Emu-centric satirical podcasts. Thanks very much.
A
will journey on from place to place. And if that's the case, then my life's a waste, cause there's nothing left to live for but tomorrow. And tomorrow's just another day away.